But if you close your eyes, does it almost feel like nothing changed at all?
Chapter 4. The Dark Woman was never kind in her lessons, but they were useful lessons. It's one of the things John always feels he should defend her for, to Noel and the others. Dark Woman is brutal, and her training methods are harsh, and she sees no need for mercy with those who would call themselves Jedi. But she's one of the most skilled Jedi Masters in recent galactic history. There's no one who knows more old skills, more dark, dusty corners of Jedi lore. For all that she's a last resort for troublesome Padawans, she's also the Council's spy, their hidden intelligence in the most dangerous situations. When she raised John, it was to be a useful, dangerous thing she could loose on the galaxy, to give the Order another edge in their fight. She gave him all the skills he needed to survive in her line of work, all the skills she dredged up from the depths of forgotten books, found in improbable places. Dark Woman had hoped to make him just like her, so she armed him for the dangers she put herself in. That doesn't mean John likes using those skills. Pulling himself through a solid object feels a little like every molecule is screaming. His body doesn't want to. The stone doesn't want him to. The power vibrates wrong against his skin, washes through the force in an eddy of uneasy power. And John drags himself through the stone, teeth gritted, desperate to get to the other side. It's a last resort ability, and he can feel it leeching his strength, making his head throb as he holds it steady. Dark Woman was a thorough teacher, but John was never that skilled a student. Finally, his hand breaks through into empty air, and John groans. He pulls himself the rest of the way out, spilling down onto the floor, and then slumps there, eyes closed as he tries to catch his breath. Next time he's about to volunteer for a dangerous mission to a lost temple to find a legendary lightsaber, he's going to think twice about it. Maybe three times. Noel is fond of adventure. She can do it if she's so enamored of the idea. Before he can gather himself, before he can even lift his head, there's a shout. John twitches hard, trying to summon the strength to leap up, face whatever new danger this is. But he doesn't get the chance. Hands grab his arms, a set on either side, and haul him upright. And John staggers, slumps into their hold as his head spins. The feeling makes him grimace, and he needs to keep up practice with Dark Woman's more obscure techniques. Needs to be stronger than this, but using them always makes him think of her and remember things he would rather forget. If he were braver, stronger, he would. But John always did disappoint her utterly. John, what happened? Fives demands. And the words are loud, but his grip on John's arm is gentle. More support than restraint. Easy, Fives, Echo says more quietly. And a moment later, he's pulling John's arm over his shoulder, wrapping his own arm around his waist. Find a rock and toss it down those stairs. We should get away from this spot.
With our luck, that'll make the whole temple sink into the river, Five says ruefully.
But he steps away, and John tries to straighten, tries to make his eyes focus so that he'll be able to help if another trap activates. Echo holds him back, though. Holds him steady, and after a second, John just gives up and lets him, closing his eyes again and concentrating on staying upright. Are you okay? Echo asks quietly. We have a little bhakta with us if you need it. It takes John a moment, but he shakes his head. Tired, he says, and it rasps in his throat, a little too ragged. The inside of his head aches like an unused muscle that's been overstretched, and he curses himself for this ridiculous bit of weakness. He should be better. He shouldn't be so tired from a few moments of using that skill, but... Well, even Dark Woman only uses it for stepping through doors and walls, not for dragging herself 100 yards through solid stone. John can at least be satisfied with that. Echo's laugh is a crack of sound, low and disbelieving. You walked through a wall, he says. We thought you were dead. We thought you died for us, Five says, like a correction. And a moment later, he's on John's other side, arms snaking around his waist beside Echo's, to help hold him up. That stone made it all the way to the bottom without getting crushed by spikes from the ceiling or something. And there's some kind of garden down there. I think we'll be okay as long as we don't touch anything. Something about that sounds familiar. Like it should spark recognition. But John can't think what. He forces his eyes open again. Tries to focus on Fives and Echo and asks. The energy from the crystals didn't hit you?
No.
Five says, and gives him a grin as they pull him forward.
No thanks to Echo.
Shut up, Echo says, mildly chagrined.
I was distracted by our Jedi getting crushed to death, okay?
Fives makes a rueful sound. Yeah, I noticed that too, he says. John, first step here. I might pass out, John says. In the interest of full disclosure, because there are black spots swimming at the edges of his vision. That's fine. We've got you, Echo says firmly. Still nothing that wants to eat us, right? So we'll be all right, even if you do. A part of John wants to argue, but the rest of him recognizes that it's a bad idea. He's been around Noel long enough to know precisely what those look like. Instead, he grunts, then says, My comm, don't use it for outgoing transmissions, even if there's a signal. Not safe. There's a moment of silence, and John can feel them exchanging glances. We won't, promise, Five says. Last step here, Echo tells him. And then,
Fives, you said garden. This is a criffing jungle. What do you think happened to a garden that hasn't been taken care of in hundreds of years?
Fives retorts. John snorts quietly, but the feeling of grass under his boots is a relief, and the hum of plant life all around them redoubles, green against raw nerves. He can feel himself slipping, his feet dragging. But a moment later, Echo says softly, There's some clear space here. And some kind of spring. I think we should be safe, John. We're putting you down, okay? John tries to reply, but somewhere between the feeling of sinking into long grass and the touch of hands at the clasp of his cloak, he loses time. When he focuses again, he's on his back on soft earth, and someone is pulling his boots off, another set of hands propping his head up. For a moment, John thinks about protesting, but... The darkness feels soft all around him, and the temple is silent. He closes his eyes, breathes out, and sleeps. The silence looms, and Echo can't quite breathe through it. Clear, Five says softly, sinking down beside him and setting his blaster in his lap. If there's anything down here, I can't see it. A Jedi would probably have better luck, Echo says, only a little wry. And Fives huffs a near silent laugh, glancing down at the Jedi stretched out between them. John hasn't moved since they set him down, And if Echo couldn't see his chest rising, he might worry. I think we're on our own for a bit, he says, and can't help but reach out to touch a strand of wet hair that straggles down John's cheek. There's a soft breath, and John turns his face into the touch just a little, though he doesn't otherwise move. Echo doesn't pull his hand back, even though he probably should. Fives is watching, too, and when Echo glances at him, his smile is quick and lazy, but in a way that has teeth behind it. Not permanently, though, he says, and drags his knuckles lightly over the sharp slant of John's cheekbone. I kind of thought we would be. Echo had, too. They'd followed orders, run, but even as they slid out into open air, he'd looked back, expected to see the strange, scruffy Jedi who had saved Fives be crushed to death in the closing walls, had seen the stones meet, had heard the grinding mechanisms stop, and been absolutely sure that he and Fives were alone in a booby-trapped temple far away from the rest of the 501st. Absolutely sure that the man who saved Fives had died to buy them an escape and hated it. And then he'd pulled himself out of the stone like he was climbing out of a pool of viscous liquid, walked through a wall and fell to his knees. And it was like Echo's heart had restarted with one great shuddering beat. And I thought General Skywalker did strange things, Five says, quiet, amused, and Echo can't help but snort, because it's true. He hasn't heard any other clones mention similar things either, except for the wolf pack talking about Plo Koon freezing water and summoning lightning to his fingertips. I can't believe he doesn't have any troopers, Echo says, and, well, it's not quite a flicker of jealousy he feels towards brothers who don't even exist, but maybe it's the next best thing, because John has already saved them multiple times, shown beyond words that he'll die rather than leave them behind, and that's a lot for a general. Echo understands why most generals can't do the same, but all he can think of is how John would be with his own squad. They'd be the safest clones in the galaxy, probably. After Rishi, after droid bait and cut up and heavy, it's okay for Echo to want that for himself and Fives. It's weird, Fives agrees, stretching out his legs and leaning back on his hands. By the tone of his voice, he knows precisely where Echo's thoughts are. But when Echo glances at him, Fives is watching John. He's weird. Fives almost died today, too. Would most certainly have died if John hadn't appeared out of the darkness to heal him. Echo breathes out, breathes in, and reaches across John to grab Fives by the shoulder. It gets him a startled look, and then a smile. And Fives leans over. Echo bends to meet him, slants their mouths together in a slow, careful kiss that lingers, and then rests their foreheads together. His hand slides up from cupping Fives' cheek to press his thumb against the tattoo on his temple. And just for a second, Echo can't fight the memory of that fear. That despair he felt when Fives was bleeding out through his fingers, far away from any medic. I'm really glad you're okay, Fives, he says. Fives' smile is crooked, and he reaches up, fits his hand over the palm print Captain Rex left on Echo's armor on Rishi. What are the odds, he says, and Echo can't help but look down at John again. Still and worn between them. He reaches out, almost not able to resist, and is startled when his knuckles bump into Fives, halfway through the same motion. Surprised, Echo looks up, finds Fives looking back with a raised brow. and can't help but snort. "Really?" he asks. "Really?" Fives repeats, mocking. And Echo gives in grudgingly, rolling his eyes. Practically daring Fives to say anything else, he strokes lightly over wet hair. And Fives snickers, his fingers tracing a scar that slants down John's cheek. Between them, John shivers, curling in on himself. And Echo pauses, lifts his hand, then tries to assess the temperature of the air around them. There's light rising, sun filtering down to the garden, but it's still startlingly cold, especially for someone who's completely drenched and still wearing soaking wet clothes. "Controls on your thermal still work?" Fives asks after a moment, and Echo raises his wrist, checks that they do, and nods, already starting to strip off his armor. "Trade off?" he asks. Fives reaches for John's belt and sashes, pulling them off and then stripping him of his tunic. The thin undershirt is just as wet as everything else, but Echo can see Fives hesitating over it, and as the last piece of his own armor comes free, he reaches out to pull it off himself. When he gets a hand on John's skin, it's far, far colder than a human should be, and Echo grimaces. "Maybe not," he says, answering his own question. "Come on, let's get him warmed up." As Five starts stripping off his own armor, Echo reaches out, undoing the laces on John's pants and pulling them off as clinically as he can. It's hard not to pay attention to skin, scarred and bruised like John has been in too many fights recently. But this is to keep John warm, nothing more. As soon as the last of the soaked clothes are off, he carefully gathers John into his arms and then lies down, tugging John flush against him. A moment later, Five settles along the line of John's back, draping an arm over him. The thermals are warm and getting warmer as they raise the heat, but John is still cool to the touch, and Echo doesn't like it. "You know," Five says, and that grin means nothing good. "We've talked about getting a Jedi between us, but this isn't quite how I was picturing it." Echo rolls his eyes. "Now's not exactly the time, Fives," he huffs. "And besides, we were talking about General Secura."
"Yeah, but I like John," Five says easily, "and there's less chance of death by Bly."
"That," Echo is willing to admit, "is very true. General Secura seemed into them, but the whole time they'd been talking to her, Bly was hovering right over her shoulder like a very aggressive guard dog, and looked equally ready to rip their throats out at the drop of a hat. Besides, John's sweet in a very different way than General Secura. And he's steady, full of a faith Echo isn't used to seeing. Not quite warm, but painfully kind." "Later," he says quietly. "When John's found whatever he's looking for in the temple, and they've made it back to the surface and the rest of the 501st, they can bring it up. Hopefully John will say yes, and hopefully he'll stick around. Or at least agree to meet them somewhere later. Coruscant, at least. Their leave usually puts them there, and since he's a Jedi, he probably goes back to the temple frequently." Fives curls his fingers over John's ribs, framing the edges of a deep bruise going violet against his skin. "He said he was looking to take out the leaders of the war," he says quietly. "There might not be much of a later." Echo winces, can't quite help the way his arms go a little tighter around John. He knows the rates at which Jedi are dying, particularly Jedi undercover in the CIS. And if John is aiming for Dooku and Grievous and those like them, he's going to be in 10 times the danger. "This weapon he's looking for will help," Echo says quietly. He doesn't say he'll be fine because he doesn't know that, can't, but he wants to believe it. I won't let that happen, not unless I'm dead first, John had said, and those words hit hard somewhere deep in Echo's chest, especially like this, in a place where things could come out of nowhere and eat them just like Rishi. Maybe, Fives agrees, but he's watching Echo, dark eyes and something intent, and Echo can't resist. He leans up on one elbow, and Fives makes a low sound of amusement, curling forward to meet him in a slow kiss. His hair is stiff with drying blood under Echo's fingertips, a grim reminder of the fact that he was dying just a few hours ago. And all Echo wants is to get him somewhere safe and warm and quiet, take his time making sure Fives is all in one piece. Maybe with John between them, so they can thank him for the rescue, so they can get to know him a little better, intimate and immediate. Echo certainly wouldn't object to that. Maybe is all we can have right now, he points out, and Five snorts, flopping back down. He pulls John against him, tangling their legs together and hooking his chin over John's shoulder as he gives Echo a faintly wry smile. You're such a pessimist sometimes, he accuses. Echo rolls his eyes but shifts closer, one arm under John's head, the other stretched across him to curl around Five's hip. Realist, he counters. Yeah. So start figuring out a realistic way to get John to stick around a little longer once he deals with whatever he needs to do, Fives tells him, and settles in, forehead resting against the back of John's skull as he closes his eyes. Echo thinks of the feeling of it, the brush of warm breath against the back of his neck, and wants to shiver. He doesn't, but I think we can come up with something, he says, low, and Fives smiles, but doesn't open his eyes. Echo stares at him in the brightening light, at John between them, and breathes in, breathes out, and tries not to think about how little they can manage to hold on to in the middle of a war. This might be all they get if they're not careful, even if they are careful, knowing how things go. Clone troopers don't have a high survival rate, and Jedi don't either. If it is all they have, Fives has a point. They should make the most of it. For the first time in years, John wakes slowly. There's no sudden wrench of consciousness bringing him back to stark awareness. No surge of alarm putting him on his feet in an instant. Just warmth all around him and a heartbeat under his ear, the weight of a head on his shoulder. It takes a long minute to realize why that's strange, why it's wrong. But it doesn't feel wrong, just peaceful. It's strange. Slowly, reluctantly, John opens his eyes. There's black cloth beneath him, an edge of dark skin in his periphery, and he can feel Echo's arm around him. Echo is flat on his back, John draped over his chest, and it's warm. Thermals, John recognizes after a moment, running to provide extra heat. On top of him, too, Fives is curled over him, nose buried in John's hair, one hand hooked dangerously high around his thigh. It's a little hard to breathe, and not just because of the weight on top of him. Forcing himself back to focus, John closes his eyes, assessing. He feels better, less raw in every nerve ending. There's sunlight all around them, and the air is still cool, but the heat of Fives and Echo surrounding him makes it easily ignorable. No danger that John can sense, or at least nothing immediate, and the force here is bright, quiet. It feels like Dagobah, or at least a shard of it. There's some nexus here, a small little fraction of the force that's pure and clean, and it settles over John's senses like a blanket, soft and comforting. He turns his head, looking, and catches a glimpse of steam in the cool air, stone, and the burble of running water. Faye had mentioned something about a spring with healing properties, hadn't she? John hadn't expected them to find it so easily, but he's hardly about to complain. If they need it later, it should be simple enough to find. He doesn't want to move, doesn't want to have to get up, but Fives and Echo's kindness isn't a thing to take advantage of. They clearly were trying to warm him up, and that's already far more than John expected. Steeling himself, he carefully shifts. Against the back of his neck, Fives groans. The sound makes John's skin prickle, and he can't quite stifle a shiver as those fingers tighten around his thigh. As Fives curls in tighter, he freezes, even as Echo's arm shifts, and there's a huff against his temple. "Ugh, Fives," Echo complains. "Get off, bastard." "No," Fives says petulantly. "I'm comfortable." "I'm not, because I can't breathe." John can't help it. He snorts quietly, pushing up and gently extricating himself from the pile. Echo watches him go, an expression John can't read on his face, and Five's hand slides down his leg, a deliberate sweep, before he rolls over and flops onto his back, stretching his arms over his head and sighing into it. "Feeling better?" he asks, glancing at John. And John thinks of that soft moan against his skin and has to swallow. "Much," he says, a little rough, and realizes, belatedly, that he's almost naked, stripped down to nothing but his underwear. He has no idea how long it's been, except the light is everywhere now, but likely not enough to dry things, not in this temperature. "The rocks around the spring were the warmest, so we put your stuff there," Echo says, sitting up. He's still watching, and it makes John extra aware of his own skin, the scars he carries. Not entirely unpleasantly, but he still has to look away, still has to focus on calling his clothes over to him with a gesture. They're vaguely damp, but he pulls them on regardless. Combs his fingers roughly through his hair and tries to brush it back behind his ears to keep it out of his face. His lightsaber, at least, is undamaged. He checks it over carefully. "Is the hilt made of wood?" Fives asks curiously, and a hand settles on John's shoulder as a body leans over him. It takes effort for him not to twitch, and more to keep his breathing even in the face of Fives' warmth. But he inclines his head. "Brylark wood," he says. "My master liked to combine the organic with the inorganic. Most Padawans make their lightsabers with a reference to their masters in the design." He hesitates, glancing at the tunics he still has to put on, then offers it to Fives. There's a sharp inhale right next to his ear, and John shoves down the urge to lean back into the solid body behind him. Before he can be tempted anymore, at least, Fives leans in. "Really?" he asks, delighted. "I thought Jedi didn't let other people touch their lightsabers." Echo snickers. "Someone should tell Generals Kenobi and Skywalker then," he says.
Cody and Rex are always picking them up off the battlefield somewhere. The idea makes John grimace. He's not wholly reliant on a lightsaber to fight, but the idea of just dropping it somewhere makes him want to double-check the connector clips anyway. "It's fine," he says instead, and sets the hilt in Five's hand. "I trust you not to break it." "That's a lot of trust," Echo says dryly. Fives makes a rude sound and straightens, gently turning the hilt over in his hands. He deliberately fits his fingers around it, keeping his thumb well away from the ignition button, and says in quiet surprise, "It's so light." "It is?" Echo rises as well, coming over to see. And John has to hide a smile, pulling his robes on and then doing up the sashes. His belt and pouches are still wet, the worn leather cracking and scraped, and he grips it for a second, but empties the pouches of anything that survived and then leaves it by the edge of the spring. There's no use being attached to physical things. His cloak is the driest of his clothes, the cloth rough but resistant to water, and he pulls it on with a sense of relief, even if he leaves the hood down. As he settles it, Fives makes a sound of offense, and he turns to see that Echo has claimed the lightsaber, using his body to block Fives from grabbing it back as he looks it over. Fives is practically plastered against his back, reaching around him to try and grab it, and John chuckles softly. "You realize there's no safety, right?" he says, and Fives freezes. So does Echo, and after a long, tense moment, they trade looks. "None?" Echo says, disbelieving. John shakes his head, lifting a hand and calling the weapon back to him with a flick of his fingers. It tucks itself through his sash, and he says, "My master always thought it was a metaphor. Jedi are weapons without safeties. While we're learning to control ourselves, we learn to control our lightsabers too, as a physical reminder." There's a pause, and then Fives makes a face, pulling away from Echo. "No offense, but your master doesn't exactly sound like a ray of sunshine," he says. "She wasn't," John says, because he can't imagine any phrase that would describe Dark Woman less. "But she wasn't wrong." Echo makes a skeptical sound. "Anyone's a weapon if you look at it that way," he says. "The clones definitely are." "Yeah," Five says, immediate agreement. "Anyone can throw a punch hard enough to kill another person or trigger an explosive. The Jedi are special, but you're not the only dangerous things in the galaxy." John stares at them for a moment, not entirely certain how to respond. Dark Woman was always so convinced in the duty of the Jedi, in the danger of them, and he's never particularly thought about it that way. "Oh," he says, frowning. With a laugh, Fives hooks an arm over his shoulder, leaning into him. "One of the reasons the clones and the Jedi work so well together, right?" he says. John has to look away from the sight of his smile. But the only other place to look is at Echo, who claps a hand on his free shoulder and grips gently. "How many more levels to go until the vault?" he asks. And his smile is crooked, but John's skin prickles and he looks away. Doesn't try to name the emotion that rises. "A few," he says, hoarse. "Ready for more traps?" "I think we can handle it," Echo says, and it's not as cocky as Five's agreeable grin, but there's a steady certainty to it, a warmth that makes it just a little harder to swallow than it should be. "All right," John says, though he doesn't step out from between them. "Let's go."